Once there was a dragon, and this dragon loved fire. The dragon loved fire more than anything in the world. Kept his cave very, very warm at all times. In fact, his cave was like an inferno, like a furnace. It was so hot in there that no one ever dared visit. For as long as the dragon lived in that cave, he found himself perfectly toasty. Now, one day, the wood that the dragon used to keep his cave warm ran out. He'd scoured the forests. He'd brought home all the dead trees he could find. But no, there was scarcely enough to keep the fire going just a little. Day by day, the cave became cooler and cooler. Not the environment the dragon wanted at all. This was, you should know, in the days before dragons could breathe fire. And so, as the cave became cooler and cooler, no longer the warm furnace that the dragons so loved, the dragon felt himself becoming more and more miserable, more and more pessimistic about whether life was worth living or not. And as the wood ran out, so the dragon's mood dropped lower and lower and lower. Until he became known to the people who lived thereabouts as the Weeping Dragon. The dragon who was always crying. For although he managed to scratch together a few bits and pieces of wood, just enough to keep the fire in his cave burning, although it made a good deal of smoke, it was not enough to keep him really warm. No, the Weeping Dragon he was called, partly because of the smoke from the rather poor quality wood and damp bark that he managed to scratch together, but more because of his deep longing for that wonderful heat that he'd known so well. Time went by, and the dragon became more and more sad, wept and wept, seemingly without end. The people of the nearby villages only needed to fear him when they went out gathering wood. For if every saw anyone gathering wood without his say-so, he would become furious and attack them. However, he was so weakened by his sadness that he only foraged out on rare occasions, retiring to his cave and to his weeping as often as he could. But in one of these villages, there was a little boy. And the little boy found himself fascinated by the dragon. Could not stop thinking about him. And whenever he asked his parents, "Why does he weep?" they would say they didn't know. Dragons were dragons and had their own reasons for doing things. They didn't understand dragons, and they had no intention of finding out more about them. "But he must be wanting something," said the little boy. "Surely." And to his questions, he got nothing but rebukes. Got nothing but, "Be quiet and don't worry about it, and mind your own business. Leave the dragon to his." But he couldn't not think about it. The dragon was too interesting, too strange, too curious, too wild. Why would something that big and strong weep from morning till night? The boy began venturing near the dragon's cave, creeping along, gazing from behind bushes. Looking at the dragon, the poorest, saddest sight, snivelling and weeping, great tears globuling out of his eyes, his nose bubbling, his mouth drooling, as he wept and wept, sometimes all through the night. The boy became obsessed, fascinated to the point of distraction. Why does he weep? Days passed, weeks rolled by, months turned to years. And although the boy grew up to become a young man, he was not interested in anything in the world but the dragon. The people went about their lives, minding their own business, his parents expecting him to get a job, to become an apprentice, to learn a trade. But all he wanted to do was find out why the dragon wept and what it was he wanted.
"Oh, don't be ridiculous," said his parents. "Just leave the dragon to himself. He can look after himself and we can look after ourselves. You don't need to go traipsing after a silly dragon."
But the young man did not want to leave the dragon to himself. It felt to him like the dragon had become a part of him. The dragon's weeping had become a part of his story. The dragon's life was somehow inextricably bound up with his. "Why is he weeping?" had been the question that he'd asked more times than any other during his boyhood. And now that he was a young man, he intended to use all that being a man gave him, his strength, his knowing, his ability, to give the dragon what he wanted. One day, when he was just a man, he went up to the cave of the dragon and he did something that he had never dared do before. He cleared his throat.
"Excuse me, sir."
The dragon by now was a sorry sight. A scavenger of mice and rats, of dead birds, of the odd plant that he could just about digest, a weeper, a moper. The dragon was shriveled, cold, shivering, barely able to scratch up a few reeds and damp bits of bark, a few twigs here and there to keep his miserable fire going. His eyes were lined with muck and smut from all the tears that he'd been crying for years and years. He looked up gloomy-eyed and gazed at the young man standing there and said,
"Go away!"
"I am not going anywhere," said the young man. "You don't know this, but I've been watching you for a long time."
"Go away!" said the dragon. "I don't want visitors."
And as if to prove the point, he bared his ferocious jaw. Those huge teeth had not rotted, although his heart was weeping, his teeth were as strong and glittering and shiny as they'd always been. His claws scratched the cave floor, as if to add sound effects to what the boy was already seeing.
"I am not here to harm you, nor am I here to bother you. I'm here to help you. I'm here to stop you weeping. I want to know what it is I can do for you."
The dragon's head dropped heavily onto the cave floor.
"Huh, you can't stop me weeping," he said. "Nothing can. Nobody can. I want to get my cave warm. That's what I want. It's simple."
"That?" said the boy. "You're weeping because..."
"Because there's not enough wood in the forest. Because I can't get my fire going strong enough. Because I can't get it warm like I want it. Oh, don't even remind me. Just go away.
The man stood there, astonished.
Do you mean to say all these years you've been crying for lack of wood?
Well, I can get you wood. I can get all the wood you need. Soon we'll have this fire stoked up.
The dragon lifted a heavy eyelid, gazed at the boy.
He said, do you mean that?
Of course, said the boy. I can get a job for some months, get a whole lot of money, and I can buy the best burning wood you ever saw, wood that comes from forests miles from here that you will never have even seen. Oh, I can get you the best fire. You'll be so warm, you'll be toasty. In fact, it'll probably be too warm before long.
Nothing, said the dragon, could ever be too warm. Go and get me this wood. I look forward to your return.
It seemed so simple. The boy walked out of that cave as if he had the key in his hands to the mystery of his whole childhood. It were that simple. Get a job, earn some money, and then buy some of that high-quality wood that the rich people burnt in their fires. Well, it wouldn't be long. And sure enough, it wasn't long. He worked on a building site, working so hard, mornings, evenings, sometimes sleeping only a few hours, that the foreman thought he was the best worker he'd ever come across, and doubled his pay. Well, this only shortened the time the boy needed to earn the money that he required to get the wood for the dragon. Soon, it was loaded up in 2 carriage loads. Soon, the horses were hitched to the carriages, and soon they had pulled them all the way to the dragon's cave. And when the carriages had gone, and that great pile of wood stood outside the dragon's cave, the boy beamed. But the dragon was gone. Simply gone. Not there at all. The fire had gone out. The boy could not see anything, anywhere. No trace of the dragon or where he'd gone. And as for the fire, never in all the years that he had crept up and watched the dragon from behind the bushes had he ever seen the fire be out. He'd seen it smouldering for sure. He'd seen it miserably, wretchedly, trying to burn its way through some old damp reeds. But never had he seen it go out. Not once. Dragon! He called out. But the dragon was gone. Dragon, where are you? I've brought the wood. And then as he looked up into the sky, he saw a sight that he had never seen before. You must understand that this was long before dragons could fly. Up in the sky, he saw the dragon had grown wings and was borne aloft high in the air, wheeling, wheeling up in the sky. Dragon! Called the boy. And his voice seemed lost in the blueness.
Dragon, come down! I've got the wood for you! Why have you let the fire go out?
He screamed so loud that the dragon for a moment stopped beating his wings and looked down. And then the strangest thing occurred. the boy saw a plume of fire billowing around the dragon's head, as if the dragon somehow had got a fire up there, but then it was gone. The boy gazed and saw once more a great plume of fire appearing around the dragon's head. Astonished, he gazed in wonder, waving his hands for the dragon to come down. Reluctantly, it seemed, the dragon wheeled about and landed upon the ground in a great flurry of wings, sending ashes and old bits of wood flying in all directions. The dragon now was entirely changed. His eyes sparkled. His whole body seemed alive, lithe. "Dragon," said the boy, "where did you get those wings?" "I remembered them," said the dragon. "I remembered them. They'd always been there. It's just that I forgot them." "But look, dragon, I bought the wood for you." "Ah," said the dragon, "I remember. Huh. I wanted a fire, didn't I?" "Yes, you told me so," said the boy. "You told me you wanted wood for a fire." "Yes, I remember," said the dragon. And the smile on his face was broad and beaming. "Dragon, what's happened to you?" said the boy. "What happened while I was gone?" "Ah," said the dragon, "you've no idea. And you won't even believe it if I tell you." "Oh, I want to know," said the boy. "I've spent the last weeks working for you, and now it seems you don't even need what I've brought." "Huh. Well," said the dragon, "you did give me what I needed, but not in perhaps the way you were expecting. Let me tell you, it was like this. The night after you left, I found myself sitting in my cave. And the strangest thing was that for the first time in my life, I no longer felt sorry for myself. You see, no one had ever offered to help. No one had ever shown that they cared about me in any way. And so, I'd spent my whole life moping over my misfortune. But when you came, when you told me that you wanted to help, something in my heart was touched. I cannot describe it any other way. Something in my heart became alive. I thought of you. Oh, I thought of you a lot. I thought of how kind you must be to spend your time working for me so that my fire could be lit again, so that I could have my cave blazing like it had been before. I thought of what a kind boy you must be, what a special boy you must be. And the more I thought of you, the more this thing in my heart, this warmth in my heart, grew. And you know, the more it grew, the better I felt. The more it grew, the more happy I began to feel. Until I found that when I wasn't thinking about you, the fire would go away. When I wasn't thinking about how kind and how good you were, that fire in my heart would diminish. But if I thought for just a moment of this wonderful young man who'd come to my cave and sought to help me so kindly without even knowing me, that fire would come back. Oh, how good it felt when it returned. And so, I found that the more I thought of you, the better I felt. And so I made it my practice to think of you every day. I'd wake up in the morning and think of you at once. And when I went to bed, Oh, I'd think of you again. And between, I'd think of you non-stop. And now the dragon's voice became quite low, and he seemed to be saying something that even he could not quite believe. Something very serious. He leant forward. The young man leant forward too. You see, what happened was, when I thought of you, how kind you were, that flame growing brighter and brighter, at one point, became real.
Real?
Said the boy.
Real. I mean a real fire.
Like flames, like true heat.
But it was in you, said the young man. How could it possibly have been a real fire? You'd have been burnt.
No, there's something about dragons that even I didn't know, that I should have remembered, but I'd forgotten. Dragons can keep fire inside of them. Then I realized that the more I thought of you, the more the fire grew. The more I considered how kind, how good, how thoughtful you were, the more I had a fire raging inside of me. And you know what happened next?
No, said the boy. What?
What happened next stunned me. The fire had grown so big, so hot, so fierce from all this thinking about how good you were, that I felt it was too big.
Too big? Said the boy.
Too big, said the dragon.
Too big to keep inside of me anymore. I thought, where's it going to go?
I thought of a couple of options, and then I opened my mouth. And out of my mouth, there came the biggest, brightest fire you ever saw.
Like the kind of fire I always wanted to have in my cave. So big and bright, orange, yellow, glowing, and warm.
But let me tell you, it was not warm just on the outside.
When I let it out, my whole body filled up with it on the inside too. I was all fire.
Oh my goodness, said the boy. And at that moment, he realized something he had noticed before but not thought about, which was that the inside of the dragon's cave was entirely covered with black soot.
You mean you...
Yes, said the dragon.
I let out so much fire that it cooked this place, cooked it so hot that I was all fire on the outside and on the inside.
Oh, but didn't you burn? Said the young man.
No, we dragons can never have too much fire. We thrive on it. We live on it. It's our lifeblood. It's what we are.
You gave it back to me, young one.
Oh, and then do you know what happened next?
I can't even guess, said the young man.
Well, when I remembered who I really was, said the dragon, when I remembered who I really am, I found my wings. They'd always been there, but somehow they'd grown so thin and so lifeless that they'd simply become a part of my skin, fused to my skin, not moving, no strength. But as the fire returned, as I cooked my body from inside and outside, my wings became wings again. They became strong. They became alive. And young man, I did something that I thought I'd never do.
You flew, said the boy.
I did not just fly. I took over the sky.
And with that, the dragon, as if to demonstrate, flew up into the air and the boy saw exactly what he meant. The sky seemed to have been created for the dragon, seemed to be his playground, seemed to be what skies were invented for. The dragon flew in every direction, more powerfully, more magnificently than a flock of birds. And as he flew, great plumes of fire burst from his mouth. It was quite some time before the dragon landed. And once again, the boy, who was a young man, who in a way was still a boy, could not speak for wonder. "All this wood," he said. "You don't need it anymore, do you?" "Oh," said the dragon, "there's something I can do with that." And he breathed out a great plume of fire, and every bit of wood that the fire touched was not singed or sizzled or burnt to a cinder, but rather transformed into gold, pure gold, the finest sort that only the king has in his palace. The boy put his hands to his mouth and almost screamed in astonishment. "Gold!" he said. "How did you do that?" "That's what my fire is for," said the dragon. "Everything it touches turns to gold."
But there's more gold there than the king has in his coffers."
"Then spend it wisely," said the dragon. "And remember where it came from. Remember deeply where it came from." And with that, the dragon was gone. Flapping his wings and flying into the sky, he disappeared far from view and was gone. And the boy gazed at that great pile of gold. Those big chunks of wood were massive, or had been massive, so that now he found himself looking at great chunks of gold, so big he had no hope of lifting them. "What am I to do?" he thought. And in that moment, he remembered the last thing that the dragon had said. "Remember deeply where it has come from." And so the boy took the gold, and he built himself a house. And he kept the gold stored down in his cellar and told no one. But every now and then he would go down and he would melt a little bit of that gold and make of it gold coins. And then he would go out into the world dressed as a beggar. And he would go about the streets, disguised in this way, and offer his hand out to anyone that would pass. And if ever a person dropped a few coins in his hand, he would, quick as a thief, quick as the night, whip from his pocket a few of the gold coins and slip them into the pocket of the passerby. So quickly that the person did not even see, so skillfully that they had no chance of doing so. To those that would not give him money, he would not return it. To those that gave just a few coins, he would return a few coins back. To those that gave lavishly, he would fill their pockets secretly with gold. And in this way, he knew he was doing what the dragon would have wished. In this way, He knew he was passing on the dragon's gold in a way that the dragon would understand. And from that day forth, until the very day he died, the boy who'd been a young man, who became an old man, knew the greatest joy that it is possible to feel. A joy like a fire burning in his heart. A joy like a warmth and a goodness that would fill him up and light his days and have him blessing from the bottom of his heart the day that he first saw the dragon weeping.